KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Winona LaDuke, speaking Saturday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the EMU Ballroom at the University of Oregon in Eugene. Winona LaDuke will speak on nature's historic position as property and the international call to legally recognize nature's right to exist, persist, and naturally evolve. This global movement is dedicated to normalizing the notion of rights of nature. Again, that's Winona LaDuke speaking on the rights of nature, Saturday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the EMU Ballroom on the corner of 19th Avenue and University Street in Eugene. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis, K220 HR Hood River, K282 BH Philomath.
Are live on air.
Yes, a kookaburra bird is what I have an impersonation of.
Oh, this is wonderful. Kookaburra.
They're also from Australia.
That's right.
Yeah, okay, ready?
Yes, we are ready.
Well,
that was amazing. That was. We don't know what to say about that, except thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to The Digital Divide on KBOO Portland. That's right. This is your host, Rabia Yemen, and I want to welcome you. It's been a week, right? It's been a week. Today, I'm going to invite callers to weigh in on the topic of the DNC emails published on WikiLeaks. I want to talk about privacy in a digital world, your personal privacy, and the privacy of public figures. Who deserves to have their digital lives exposed to the public, and who doesn't? I want to stay on topic, and we'll be asking callers to refrain from profanity, to turn down your radio before you call, and we'll get to that. We'll want to know, what are your personal expectations of internet and email privacy? Did you feel releasing the hacked DNC emails and publishing them publicly was a reasonable thing to do in the name of transparency? Why did we not hear or see anything in the mainstream media about RNC or Republican emails being hacked and exposed? And lastly, do you think hackers in Russia or a government was behind this? And be prepared to back it up with facts, not feelings. So that's what we're going to talk about today. But before we start taking your calls, I want to just kind of establish what WikiLeaks is and isn't, because I think that we can lose. We either aren't informed about that or we don't understand. I think that there's a lot of misconception that WikiLeaks hacked the emails and then published them. But that's not what WikiLeaks does. So what is WikiLeaks? And of course, this is from WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks is a multinational media organization and an associated library. It was founded by its publisher, Julian Assange, in 2006. WikiLeaks specializes in the analysis and publication of large data sets of censored or otherwise restricted official materials involving war, spying, and corruption. It has so far published more than 10 million documents and associated analysis. WikiLeaks is a giant library of the world's most persecuted documents. We give asylum to these documents, they say. We analyze them, we promote them, and we obtain more, says Julian Assange. Although no organization can hope to have a perfect record forever, thus far, WikiLeaks has a perfect in-document authentication and resistance to all censorship attempts. WikiLeaks, its publisher, and its journalists have won many awards, including the Economist New Media Award in 2008, the Amnesty New Media Award in 2009, Time Magazine Person of the Year, People's Choice, the Sam Adams Award for Integrity 2010, and many other awards, as well as nominations for the UN Mandela Prize in 2015 and nomination in 6 consecutive years for the Nobel Peace Prize 2010 to 2015. WikiLeaks is entirely funded by its publisher, that would be Julian. The publication sales and the donations from the general public. WikiLeaks has more than 100 staff across the Americas, Africa, Eurasia, and the Asia Pacific. And that is from the WikiLeaks files, September 2015. And there are other questions about WikiLeaks. So in general, we, you know, tend to look positive on or positively on releasing, you know, documents and making censored documents available. And we have learned a lot because of WikiLeaks' publishing of those documents. For instance, we learned about the NSA spying because of that. Sometimes, though, there have been instances where WikiLeaks has published, along with, you know, the volumes of other information, they've published personal information of individuals who have nothing to do with politics or just ordinary individuals like you and me. In one case, it published the name of a Saudi citizen arrested for being gay. Homosexuality, of course, is a death sentence in ultra-conservative Muslim countries. They published everything the individual says. My phone, address, name, details, the Saudi man told AP, saying he was bewildered WikiLeaks had revealed the details of a paternity dispute he had with a former partner. So is this worse than the NSA spying on people? Is it the same? We'll talk about that. And we have a caller. Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon. Really, thank you for this conversation. And I just wanted to ask a question, and I have to admit I'm truly ignorant, but it occurred to me the other day that, you know, there was that book When Google Met WikiLeaks. And I was just thinking about the entrenchment of Google in the current administration and also within the Clinton camp. And I was wondering about, you know, a possible motive for why WikiLeaks was hitting so hard against Clinton. And I wonder about the actual connection between, you know, the accusations that Clinton made that were kind of Cold War rhetoric around Russia being behind those. But then I thought, well, maybe there's some veracity to that because, you know, WikiLeaks is attempting to undermine kind of the influence of that kind of technocratic rule that has kind of integrated itself into the current administration and by proxy into kind of the Clinton operation. So I just wonder, you know, if we really take a critical stance and not take WikiLeaks as, you know, always just the gospel, pure motive. But what if they had some ulterior motive as to why their leaks were so one-sided? Like, why didn't we see any leaks from, you know, Trump or a push for leaks from Trump's camp, right?
Right.
So Yeah.
Well, there is information about that. And okay. And so first of all, WikiLeaks doesn't go out and get that information. People generally
right.
present it to them, and they
right.
just consider themselves to be publishers.
Right.
And then sometimes they sell that information that they receive
right.
back to the media.
But they also have kind of an investigative component, do they not? That kind of also encourages folks to bring information in.
Well, they
right?
have a
fact checking
component. It's a fact checking
right?
component.
Okay. So I'm just thinking of Chelsea Manning and how right. there was some dialogue there, right? Where they kind of, you know, once there was a connection that was established, there was kind of an encouragement to share. So, you know, I can't help but think that those kinds of conversations and dialogues are going on with the WikiLeaks organization on an ongoing basis, right? So so the question is, who were they, who is it that they're in contact with that they're able to kind of influence and encourage to leak information?
Okay, well, thank you for your call.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to put it out as an open question. I totally enjoy WikiLeaks, and I think they inform us, but I think we have to be critical of any organization that wields as much influence over our information as
okay.
WikiLeaks.
All right, thank you. All right, so in response, the RNC, in an article in the in Politico on September 14th, Politico published an article, RNC denies that it was hacked, by Lewis Nelson. House Homeland Security Chairman Mike McCaul, who misspoke, and he did, which is pretty amazing if you're the head of Homeland Security, when he told CNN that Russian hackers had penetrated the computer systems of the Republican National Committee. And as much as I love hearing that anything penetrated the computer systems of the Republican National Committee, this turns out to be a false statement. Shortly after, Republican political operatives said that they were hacked, not the RNC. The RNC also denied that because, and this is a cautionary tale for all of you, the RNC says their servers weren't hacked because they use two-step verification that makes getting into the system much more difficult. However, individual Republican party people, I suppose, had certain emails exposed. However, they weren't running for president. As far as the WikiLeaks and the source, so it's still unknown. It's not conclusive. Of course, our government has, and many, many government agencies have said, yes, this looks like it came from Russian. So here is a little information from an interview. The timeline of the DNC and AKP hacks. And I'll put these on the episode, the links to all these documents on the episode for today of Digital Divide. So it says, a former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency says the hack has all the hallmarks of a Russian operation. Several officials, quote unquote, say the hack was an attempt to influence the election in favor of Donald Trump. A Harvard professor and former member of the Department of Justice said that when it comes to reports that the FBI suspects Russia, he has no basis to question those reports. But the truth is, there is no public evidence whatsoever tying Russia to the hack. USA Today reports that an FBI source says the investigation into the leak has been ongoing for about a year because these hacks were discovered in June of 2015 originally. The investigation into the leak has been ongoing for about a year and did not dispute an assertion that Russia was responsible. Steve Grobman, chief technology officer with the Intel Security Group, points out that the evidence of Russian involvement could have been manufactured. Cyber threats from Invincia confirms CrowdStrike's findings. The GOP chair states that they have not been hacked because of two-factor authentication. no mention of an investigation is made. So the individual who takes credit for hacking and taking possession of the emails and then distributing them goes by the name Guccifer, Guccifer 2.0. He or she claims that they are the sole individual and that it was only one individual that hacked all of these emails. So that is the claim. These names are very, they have a lot of intrigue. Fancy Bear is a nickname given to the Russian hacking squad to be believed to be involved in the DNC attack. They regularly use fake websites as a component of phishing campaigns. And those sites almost always register their names using outside services outside of the U.S. that accept Bitcoin to avoid having their identities revealed. Do we have more calls? Okay. We want to invite your calls at 503-231-8187. And what we want to know is, what do you think your entitlement to email privacy is? Do you think the revelation of these emails of the DNC affected the election? Or do you think it had no effect whatsoever? That's what we want to know. Questions about WikiLeaks, 503-231-8187 is the number to give your opinions of the election and whether the hacked emails had an effect on the outcome. 503-231-8187. What would you do if your emails, your personal emails, became public? Would you feel that was intrusive, that you are somehow entitled to more privacy than a political organization or a public individual? That's what we want to know today. And do you think that the hackers were responsible or the government was behind it? Do you think that Julian Assange had a personal grudge against Hillary Clinton? What kind of privacy do you think that we're... All right, we have another caller. Waiting for that caller. Okay, Ralph in Corvallis. Excellent. Corvallis, you're on the air.
Hey, well, I think, and I've been thinking about this for a while, I think from when the first, Snowden stuff came out about wiretapping and all that.
But right.
I'm under the impression that when I use a device like my phone, on a cell network, or I use my Gmail on my Comcast internet, I'm using these services and I'm, sometimes paying for them, sometimes free like Gmail, but they're being provided to me by a business or a corporation. Their motives aside, I'm still relying on somebody else for my communication needs. And by using those services, I give up an expectation of privacy, or at least a certain level of expectation, because it's getting out of my hands. And so anytime my cell phone, like right now, connects to a tower to call you guys in the studio, I'm using that infrastructure, which is inherently not a private conversation because I'm not going face to face. And that's kind of the way I feel about it. Maybe I'm caving in and, maybe I should have an expectation, or we collectively should have that expectation of privacy. But because I guess what I'm saying it boils down to is because I'm using a service provided to me by somebody else, a business, Google, AT&T, Verizon, I lose that expectation because I give that communication to them to conduct for me. I'm using that service. Does that make sense?
It sure does. Thank you for your for weighing in.
Yeah, have a good one, you guys. See you.
Thank you. All right, Curtis from Eugene, welcome to the Digital Divide.
Hi, thanks. There's a guy, a researcher, a political researcher named Dave Emery, and he's been saying that WikiLeaks Assange has ties to Nazi, almost white supremacists. That I've never heard it from anyone else except from Dave Emery. But he's saying that he's ultra-conservative, actually. And so, for me, that's kind of suspect of how this came out. My issue with Hillary Clinton is a big new Brzezinski. Anyway, he, you know, the grand chessboard is what he wrote about the Balkanizing the Middle East is, and she and Clinton, her husband, have both followed that whole thing. So,
well, thank you for your call.
Thanks.
And we have another caller. Carrie, welcome to the Digital Divide. You are on the air.
Oh. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I would just like to say it's the simple message that personally, if my emails are not, if I'm not sharing my emails with someone and someone comes in and takes my emails and shares them with someone, to me that's stealing. If I'm not openly sharing or if someone's emails are not openly sharing or shared, then I feel that those emails are stolen and it's unacceptable.
Do you feel that
your emails are private?
Do you feel that political entities and organizations that serve the public, do you feel that they have the same rights to privacy as you as an individual do?
I do. And I think that people share information via email, whether public or private. You know, some things you need to, I don't know. Yes, I guess bottom line is, yes, I think public entities, their emails should be kept private unless they wish to share them.
Okay, so here's kind of the million-dollar question, and I'm not disagreeing or agreeing with you, but what about in the case of the NSA and Edward Snowden, where we have the government withholding the truth from us, misleading us, really practicing blatant lying and deception about our privacy, and then spying on us, and it only is revealed through these unauthorized documents that he exposed, that he presented to WikiLeaks?
Okay, I guess I'm not quite sure.
Right. It's not a yes or no answer because it's fuzzy.
But I a little bit. And personally, I mean, I know there's a whole big, you know, conversation about this. But for me, I don't know what those revelations helped. I don't know what those leaks helped. I think that information was still stolen. And if you have someone that has top secret clearance, and they steal the information, who can you trust with top secret clearance? I mean, some things need to be private. So this is a country where, I mean, all countries are going to have secrets. They're going to have ways of doing business, and just like any private business, and I think you need a way to communicate. I think that you ultimately, if you steal someone's email, regardless, it is stealing and it's unacceptable.
Okay. Thank you so much for weighing in.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just thanking you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So we have one more caller right now, and then we are going a call from Portland. All right. Who do we have? Oh, Paul, hello.
Hi. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to unpack everything you asked, but, you know, I'm a journalist and a social worker, so the funny thing is when I deal with homeless people and people that are in recovery, there's so much information that employers have and social services have on my folks. So we have background checks, we have credit checks, we have, you know, this huge amount of information that I think 20, 30, 40 years ago, we just were not allowing to happen. Mm-hmm. So I really do think we've given up a lot of privacy in the name of you know, this digital world that's run by the elite who already do a lot of collecting of our information, Zuckerberg, Bezos, all the people with, you know, Facebook and Amazon. And then number two, I really think that progressives and liberals should really look deep and not blame the Russians or Julian Assange for changing the election. The election was won by Trump, you know, day one when Bernie Sanders said he would support his competitor. So I just think that just muddies the water. And, you know, I'm really upset that this country has allowed the private industries to control so much of our telecommunications. And in accordance with that, the government and telecommunications corporations have worked, you know, with backdoor stealth to collect all of our information. So the third thing is, of course, public figures have to have more scrutiny than private people. I think we all have a right to privacy in this country, but I don't think presidents do, and I don't think the CIA and the NSA should be allowed so much deep secrecy. So, I mean, there's just so much to these conversations that obviously I would love to just go on for hours, but I just don't think we need to blame Julian Assange. He's done, WikiLeaks has done more for this country, more for journalists than anything. Way and talk to the Pentagon Papers, Daniel Ellsberg, you know,
right.
So deep, you know, he respects what has happened. I respect Snowden, respects so-called whistleblowers. And I don't know, KBOO sometimes has some really sort of reactionary and shifting baseline towards the middle ethos. And, you know, I'm a journalist. I'm a Marxist and as eco-socialist, and it's really surprising to see how right and center KBOO listeners and KBOO shows are moving, and that's what I have to say.
Oh, thank you. What we're going to do now is, well, we're going to hear from Julian Assange himself. It's a CNN interview. It's 15 minutes. It's not terribly long, but it's not a quickie either. So it's about 15 minutes long. It's an interview, recent interview that he did talking about why these emails were published. And I think that there's no better source than hearing directly from the individual. So are we ready for Julian Assange? All right, let's go.
So Julian, the clear bias by people in the DNC against Bernie Sanders is probably what got the most attention here in the United States. I'm wondering, in the documents that you released, what stood out to you as the most significant thing?
Well, to me, the most significant is a clear instruction by the Director of Communications, Luis Miranda, to his staff to undercover, quote, without attribution, unquote, push out a story through the media that Bernie Sanders supporters were engaged in acts of violence. That is not merely a sort of internal rhetoric complaining about Bernie Sanders. Oh, actually, we prefer Hillary. Everyone has their personal preferences. In a workplace environment, those can be expressed. This was an instruction through the chain of command at the DNC to covertly manipulate the public in order to preference one particular candidate above another.
In terms of the timing of the release of these, how much of this on the part of WikiLeaks was, I mean, clearly you timed it to the start of the DNC. Was that for maximum impact, for maximum, you know, sort of marketing?
It was for, that's when we viewed that there would be the maximum interest by readers, but also we have a responsibility to, you know, If we'd published after, you can just imagine how outraged the Democratic voting population would have been. So it had to have been before. There's quite a lot of work, as you can imagine, to verify such material and to organize it, index it, catalog it, put it into a searchable, customized database, etc.
I saw an interview where you said you had, quote, a lot more material that you might release pertaining to the U.S. election. Are you referring to more emails from the DNC? Because I talked to Donna Brazile, who, as you know, has now replaced Debbie Wasserman Schultz in the wake of this, who says that the hack went on for more than a year, they believe, and that there very well may be a lot more things out there.
We have more material related to the Hillary Clinton campaign. It is correct to say that. Of course, you have to be very precise in reporting my statements, which are always very precise. And yeah, those are extremely interesting. And we will see what will come of them in due course.
There is word today of a new FBI investigation into an alleged cyber hack of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee server, which is said to be similar to the hack of the DNC committee or the Democratic National Committee. Do you have any knowledge of this latest hack, or if you do, any intention to publish any information obtained from it?
I can't comment on anything that might reflect on sourcing, either to rule things in or to rule things out. But I will just say, and this is public information, it's not coming from me privately, that there has been multiple hacks of the DNC over the last 2 years. The DNC and the RNC, have been Swiss cheese in terms of their security. And the DNC has been notified quite some time ago that that is the case. And it has legal responsibilities that it must carry out to notify its donors if it is aware that their confidentiality has been breached by a hack. Now, the emails that we published are a separate question to the various hacks that occurred to the DNC. We have not connected those emails to a hack of the DNC, and no one else has connected them. There's other documents that are published by The Hill, The Smoking Gun, and Gawker that have been connected to that.
I'm not even going to bother to ask you about your sources, because obviously you're not going to reveal your sources. You don't do that. But U.S. officials have said that they have, and I'm quoting, little doubt was the term, that Russian hackers were behind this. They haven't said it definitively. Do you know, again, I'm not asking you who did it, but do you know who did the hacking of the DNC server that got you the information? Do you know who provided you with emails?
As a matter of policy, we don't go anywhere near commenting on sources, ruling things in, ruling things out, because it provides extra information that might be used to track down a source. But I can say that yesterday, James Clapper, the head of the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, that oversees all 16 U.S. intelligence agencies, stated that there was a lot of media hyperventilation and, quote, they didn't know enough to ascribe motivation, regardless of who it might have been. So, I mean, those kinds of statements are coming out of the man responsible for overseeing all U.S. intelligence agencies.
If, obviously, there's been a lot of focus on Russia, whereas the Russian hackers with connection to the Russian government, if, in fact, it was hackers with connection to the Russian government, that this was a state-sponsored act, would that concern you at all, given the fact the Russian government has, you know, been accused of killing journalists, you know, repressing journalism, and a whole host of other things? Would it concern you that that WikiLeaks is doing something which, whether you know it or not, is serving a state interest?
Well, I mean, the U.S. famously hacks organizations all around the world, including Amnesty International, Greenpeace, etc. The Russian government, the Chinese government, do they do that? Well, of course they do. Now, if there's a transition between collecting intelligence and using intelligence, what kind of transition is it? Well, the allegation is, in this case, the transition is to making truthful information available to the public. And if U.S. intelligence agencies want to give us truthful information, we will verify it. It will take time. They shouldn't waste our time. But we'd be very happy to also reveal information about the Russian government to the public.
I want to get your reaction to something that Edward Snowden tweeted yesterday. He said, democratizing information has never been more vital, and WikiLeaks has helped, but their hostility to even modest curation, it is a mistake. How do you respond to that idea? I mean, you and I think have discussed this before with prior leaks, the idea that you publish personal information, in this case, social security numbers, credit card numbers of people associated with the Democratic Party, or voicemail between somebody from the DNC and, you know, their kid going to a zoo.
We're not talking about personal information. We're talking about information held by the ruling political party of the United States and its cash flows. So that's very important for investigative journalism. Now, the question is, should we tamper with the evidence in a pristine archive about the ruling party and its cash flows? Now, we have a lot of experience in this. Material that WikiLeaks has published has gone on to result in the prosecutions of many criminal acts as a result of the integrity of our archives, that they can be relied on to be pristine and not tampered with. And in this particular case, we have potentially illegal movements of money that need to be tracked down and identified and argued in court, either by prosecutors or by civil litigants, that the perpetrators or the conspirators involved are properly identified.
So you're saying that if you edited, that would somehow, that you believe that would hurt the security or the sanctity of the actual raw data?
That's correct. And we've also found problems in the past. We do occasionally restrict things in a time-limited manner where we perceive that people are under serious threat of retributive acts for a time-limited manner. But preserving the integrity of an archive so it can be used in the legal process is something that we've become very, very good at. And the CIA, as a result, has had judgments against them. The European Court of Human Rights, Russia lost the UCOS case, $54 billion in the arbitration courts as a result of the integrity of the archives we publish.
There's a report in the U.S. by Politico that says DNC staffers were told to not search WikiLeaks because malware is embedded in your site, which would allow WikiLeaks to search their computers. Is that true? Does WikiLeaks have the ability to search the computer of anyone using your site?
No, and it's quite a fantastical claim. I guess it's necessary that the DNC feels in order to discourage internal questioning of its actions. But any sort of, people get malware in their email all the time. So any kind of archive of email has some malware in it, probably, if it's big enough. In this case, big enough, it's hard to say, but in cases where we've done 5 million emails from private intelligence agencies, there has been. But it is malware that is targeted at email readers, not the form in which we display it on our website.
There is a question whether you have a personal animus toward Hillary Clinton. You've criticized her on a number of national security, foreign policy issues. Obviously, she has obviously made statements against WikiLeaks. You gave an interview to the British network ITV back in June. You suggested that you're more concerned about Clinton, at least in terms of press freedom, than Donald Trump. Do you stand by that? Is this based on a personal animus?
It is false reporting. You can go back and look at that ITV interview. I never said that I wanted to harm Hillary Clinton, anything like that. It was the presenter that used that word, and the New York Times has picked its candidate in this race, and so it distorts the facts in order to try and get its candidate up. WikiLeaks has foundational documents. Those foundation documents say that we accept materials of diplomatic, legal, ethical, or historical significance that haven't been published before and are under some kind of censorship threat. This is a case that meets that. Back in 2009, we did the same thing to Republican Senator Norm Coleman's campaign. So that's 8 years of the same result.
You mentioned earlier, and I should have followed up on it, you mentioned the RNC, their systems also are vulnerable. Have you seen information on the RNC, and would you publish it if you had it?
Well, I'm making that statement because a number of security experts have made that statement, but also because a couple of months ago, the DNI came out and said that there have been numerous attacks on both the RNC and the DNC with a range of motivations, from philosophical political opposition by individuals to espionage.
So in the U.S., when the Clinton campaign comes out and says, well, look, we believe Russia is behind this, experts say this, or Jake Tapper pressed them for examples of experts, they didn't actually name any, but there is this sort of drumbeat of belief that Russia is behind this and their investigation's obviously ongoing. Do you think that is just, what does that say to you? that they're blaming Russia?
I mean, it's great material. It's a great scoop that many journalists are going through and, you know, producing great investigative results. Obviously, there's a need to try and distract from the seriousness of that. There's been protests and walkouts at the DNC because of what's happened. Debbie Weissman-Schultz has resigned. As a report earlier today in Politico, that all the senior staff of the DNC feel that they're going to be fired as a result. So, of course, people are desperate to latch onto anything to create a diversion. But it doesn't matter in WikiLeaks' case. Our methodology means that we verify the material that we publish. Sourcing is another question. Our publications are disconnected from the source because we're not writing up someone's opinion. We are providing pristine material, analyzed, indexed, with our own descriptive but entirely verifiable analysis as the result. So it is a diversion. It is a meta story. It's an interesting meta story. Every claim in the press should be checked out. But it is a meta story.
And to those right now, obviously, you're holed up. You're still at the Ecuadorian embassy in London. You've been there, I think, now for 4 years, avoiding extradition to Sweden, possibly even the United States. To Americans watching right now who agree with the U.S. government or who are angry that you published this information right before the Democratic National Convention, what is your argument? What do you say to them? That they feel you're interfering in the U.S. elections?
No, I think that is a fair question. WikiLeaks is an organization that has a lot of people in it. It's a publisher that's been going a long time. We're entirely funded by the public, by our readers. Unlike, you know, billionaire-funded foundations or Rockefeller or organizations funded by the USAID or organizations like Russia Today, we are funded by the public. We have a number of Americans that work for our organization. So, you know, most of our readers and most of our donors are in the public in the United States. So we have a connection to the United States. Personally, do I have a connection to the United States? Yes, of course, because as an Australian, Australia is in the U.S. alliance in a very significant manner, but Australians don't get a chance to vote.
So to the question of anger that you're interfering in the U.S. election, you say this is what that your readers are American and therefore it's okay?
Well, it's what our readers demand, but it's also our basic principles that the publication of true information, and that's an important qualifier, true information about modern human institutions allows us to understand what they're doing and therefore to reform them. If we don't understand what our institutions are doing, we have no hope to reform them whatsoever.
Julian Assange, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Anderson.
And we are going to just take a little 5-minute musical interlude. Then we'll be taking more calls up until the end of the program at noon. We want to just take a few minutes to pay tribute to Leonard Cohen.
If you are the dealer, I'm out of the game. If you are the healer, means I'm broken and lame. If thine is the glory, then mine must be the shame. You want it darker? We kill the flame. Magnified, sanctified be thy holy name. Vilified, crucified in the human frame. A million candles burning for the help that never came. You want it darker? I'm ready, my lord. Thank you. love her in the story, but the story's still the same. There's a lullaby for suffering and a paradox to blame. But it's written in the scriptures and it's not some idle claim. You want it darker? We kill the flame. Prisoners and the guards are taking aim. I struggled with some demons, they were middle class and tame. I didn't know I had permission to murder and to maim. You want it darker? Hineni, hineni, I'm ready, my lord.
That is the title track from the recently released album You Want It Darker by Leonard Cohen, who died November 7th and shed his human body. Thank you for all the wonderful music, art, and poetry. And we're going to take a few more calls before we wrap up the end of the Digital Divide on KBOO Portland. Do we have a caller? Okay. Number is 503-231-8187. We're talking about email privacy hacking. And in response to, you know, who did it, I have a little document. The attacker behind the DNC leaks may have tried setting up a kind of a WikiLeaks knockoff website to post other emails. The hack, widely believed to have been perpetrated by Russian intelligence, originally leaked documents under the persona Guccifer 2.0. The Smoking Gun reports that on June 27th, the Guccifer 2.0 persona directed it to a site called DC Leaks to view the leaked emails from the Clinton staffers. DC Leaks, which Guccifer 2.0 wrongly claimed in his email to the Smoking Gun to be a WikiLeaks project, has been posting leaked emails from a variety of victims since early June. So again, talking about your email privacy, your rights and expectations, Do you think that the release of those emails had any influence in the outcome of the election results? Do you think that that Russian hackers were behind it, Romanian hackers? Does it matter? And how would you feel if your emails were made public? That's what we're talking about today. And remember, the RNC feels strongly that their servers were not hacked because they use what's called two-step verification. The annoying login feature, typically where you're going to have your username and a password, and then a secondary action, maybe getting a code sent to your telephone or an email that has a code in it that you then have to enter in to have access to your account. It definitely provides an extra layer of security at the user level. We're not sure exactly how much security it provides at the server level, but if we have any server experts out there, I'd love for you to call in 503-231-8187. And just talking about some basic computer hygiene. Of course, you can download an archive of your Google emails. You can archive those so that you have a record. You can also, there is a site, I don't have it, the link handy with me right now, but you can see all of the information. Google will show you all the information from your searches and whatever that has been collected that they have. So you can know, you can see what they store about you in an effort to be more transparent. 503-231-8187 is the number to call in and express your opinions about the hacked emails, the election results, computer privacy, and your expectations. Do you think that you deserve or are entitled to more individual online privacy than corporations, governments, or public entities? 503-231-8187. Going back to the timeline of the DNC hacks and the WikiLeaks releases. Oh, it looks like we have a caller. And who do we have on the line? Dave in Oregon City, welcome to the Digital Divide.
Hi.
Hi.
I got a problem with this election.
Well, you're not alone.
Yeah, I refuse to vote because my vote is not heard. When I was young, I went with my mama to go vote. We got up to the voting booth, and we were told that who we were going to vote for was already lost the election. They voted for him back east. I don't see how they can legally do this. How can they legally wipe out our votes completely? Now, I did not vote, but I got my voting pamphlet. How can they legally do this?
Do what? Do what specifically? Turn people away like you were, or what?
No,
what? What is the
this?
How can
they legally send me a voting pamphlet when I did not register to vote?
Oh, okay.
I did not register, so they did. How can they legally do this to me?
Well, I'll tell you what. That is a question for the the election office in Multnomah County, or in the county where you would live, which would be what, Clackamas. So you would want to contact. I can't answer that. I don't know the answer to that question.
Then this election is rigged, just as he said. Election is rigged.
All right. Thank you for weighing in. Thank you. And we have another caller on the line. Perhaps. All right. Well, if you do have questions about your own receiving ballots, not receiving ballots, receiving booklets, not receiving booklets, any questions about your status or how or why you're on a list, What you need to do is contact the elections office in your county, and they will be able to explain to you what and why you are. Susanna, welcome to the Digital Divide.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for my call. I did express on another show when it came up about the Russian hacking that everybody hacks. We hack everybody.
Right.
And they pointed out that we had got affected the Argentine case against the duly elected leader charged with things by the corruptors. And affected that case significantly.
So you're feeling a little hypocrisy there in the reporting.
Yes. And if we're going to really think about who's affecting what in our country, I wonder about the FBI. I wonder about their role in the court case against the Harney County Occupier Patriot Movement. At the same time, my Senator Oregon, Senator Betsy Johnson, Brad Witt of Columbia County, and the Harney County rep did a bill mandating Dogami with $25,000 from the general fund to study public lands and all resources in Oregon that could be exploited.
Okay. Well, thank you for weighing in with your opinion. Okay, thank you.
All right. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
All right. And it looks like we have one or two more calls before we have to wrap up the show today. So who do we have on the line? Okay, no one on the line right now. 503-231-8187 is the number for you to call. We have time for about one more call to weigh in on your rights to privacy. Should individuals have more online privacy rights than public entities, governments, corporations? Just as an aside, on November, I want to say 2nd, the FCC effected I don't know if we want to call it a law, a rule, that demands that internet service providers have put in place software and whatever they need to protect against hacking, to make their servers impenetrable to hacking, to protect your individual privacy. So that is another effort by the FCC that went into effect, which I find ironic. It makes me wonder, you know, who went to all that trouble? Who was so worried about their personal emails being hacked that they felt that the FCC should institute, you know, greater precautions? Because I'm just guessing it wasn't for your or my benefit. But we don't really know that. Just speculating here. 503-231-8187. We have time for one more quick call before we wrap up the Digital Divide. I want to thank you for tuning in today. Hope that we all learn more about the subject of this election's email scandals, which consumed a ridiculous amount of time, energy, and attention from talking about real policies and goals. And we look forward to talking with you next week on the second Friday of every month. You can tune into the Digital Divide at 11 a.m. And I'm not sure if we have one more caller or not to wrap up today's show. We only have about a minute left, okay?
They told me the election had already been done, Reagan won, and so they didn't ban me from voting, but I left because it's like, what's the point? They shouldn't tell you the outcome until all the votes are done.
Agree with you completely.
Every state has had a chance to put its 2 cents, whatever it is.
Right, so they can influence the election on the other coast.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Okay, thank you so much. All right, and with that, we are going to wrap up today's Digital Divide. Again, tune in every second Friday of the month at 11 a.m. And coming up next, Don Jacobson with Moving On.
this revolver, this fire, this, I'll hold it up.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Fix-It Fair on Saturday, November 19th at 9:30 a.m. at Ron Russell Middle School in Portland. The Portland Fix-It Fair features exhibits and workshops from numerous community partners talking about issues such as water and energy savings, home and personal health, food and nutrition, community resources, recycling, and more. Childcare and lunch will be provided. Again, that's the Portland Fix-It Fair, Saturday, November 19th, from 9:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at Ron Russell Middle School, 3955 Southeast 112th Avenue in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to sponsor People's Health Clinic Benefit Party, Saturday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. People's Health Clinic is a volunteer-run clinic that hosts a walk-in at Sisters of the Road every third Friday of the month. Services include naturopathic medicine, acupuncture, massage, herbalism, and more. This party will feature live music, an herbal cocktail bar, food, raffles, and more. Again, that's People's Health Clinic Benefit Party, Saturday,